This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. Ready for an awesome episode? Well, so are we. But you know what? Before we get to it, I got to tell you that members of Navy Federal Credit Union could earn more and save more. Bam! Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as our friends at Navy Federal do. Start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit. For example, you could open an Easy Start certificate for just $50. And then how many certificates do this? You can then add money at any time and watch your savings grow. To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. Membership required. Terms and conditions apply. Loan subject to approval.
Stand by for an urgent message from the crack team at Stacking Benjamins.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, a special episode of the Stacking Benjamin Show. We're covering the second biggest bank collapse in the USA since the Great Depression. Here with details are Joe and OG.
Hey, thanks, Doug. And welcome to a special episode of the Stacking Benjamin Show. You've probably already seen online, Silicon Valley Bank was taken over by FDIC. We're going to walk into exactly what happened. And we were originally going to make this part of our Monday episode, but we thought this was important enough and you want to know what was going on soon enough that we wanted to walk you through all of the details, and then what we think your strategy should be. So we'll share what happened, we think it means, how this affects your planning. No advertisers today, no segments, just one simple discussion. If you know anybody who needs to hear this episode to get off the ledge, please share this with them. But OG, let's just start with the details about what happened. Silicon Valley Bank really tied into the tech community in a big way. And before this collapse was growing very, very quickly. I think they doubled in assets, almost nearly doubled in assets in the last year.
Right. So as you know, from a banking standpoint, what banks generally do is bring in capital, lend out money and pay interest, right? That's kind of the role that the banking system plays or an individual bank plays within the system. And just like a mutual fund, you know, you see those top mutual fund lists of, or ETF lists of this fund was the hot commodity last year. This was the best performing thing last year, that all the money goes into it. And then what happens? The fund manager can't handle all the cash. They, like the ideas and the trades that made them successful aren't able to be duplicated because there's too much money involved now, right? You can't go buy 10% of Apple and expect not to have an impact. So kind of the same thing was going on in the banking world here with this bank. So much money came in, so much VC money, so much capital of other companies, and they couldn't deploy it fast enough. And when they did, they tried to do the safe and secure thing, buy treasuries, but maybe bought them at the wrong time.
Yeah, the Federal Reserve raising interest rates right now really played into this, I think, on two occasions. Number one, OG, we had a lot of these, a lot of tech startups. You know, our podcast over the last 12 years, we always have this steady stream of fintech startups that want to come on the show and tell us what they're doing. We haven't had hardly anybody on lately.
Hell, 12 years in, we're still a startup.
We truly, someday, Grasshopper. But yeah. But that has slowed because of the fact that obviously we're seeing what's going on in the technology sector, not as much call for it, and partly because we saw interest rates going up. And as interest rates went up, it was a tougher environment for these new startups to get money. So number one, Silicon Valley Bank not bringing in as much money, not as many new startups coming around. But then number two, to your point, when they deployed the money, had to buy into the market because when interest rates go up, the value of treasuries drop. And so,
well, and it's not, yeah, it's not even just the treasury side of that. The other part of that low pressure system is the ecosystem that startups really function within is the venture capital world. And those VCs weren't able to get money either because of the cost of funds changing with the interest rates. And so as that money dried up, which they heavily relied on to fund their operations and fund payroll, et cetera, they had to go tap into their accounts at their friendly Silicon Valley branch on the corner. And then that fed into all of the things OG just talked about, which is their value of the bonds that they bought to fund their operations were dropping. Yeah,
so think about it in terms of kind of like the dominoes that happen, right? So Doug starts El Camino Inc., right? He goes out and raises a whole bunch of money and gets $100 million. Well, Doug's got to take that $100 million. He's got to do something with it, right? So he says, well, I'm just going to dump, you know, I got to put it in the bank because we're going to develop new whatever technology or whatever. In the meanwhile, I'm paying payroll, that sort of thing. So you've got a bank account that's got $100 million in it. Well, the bank's not going to literally have $100 million in cash sitting in that actual branch, right? So they're part of the banking system. One of their jobs is to take that money and go invest it, which they did. But now multiply that by a whole bunch of people all doing it at the same time early on, COVID, that sort of thing, right? All this money coming in. And then like you said, Doug, now all of a sudden that flow dries up. I don't want to use the word pyramid scheme, but that's kind of
no, but it all just comes crashing down. You've got all these things.
Just kind of like all the money was coming in, and so you always had this flow of cash coming in. So then what Doug goes, hey, I need you know $1 million for payroll this month. You know, the bank was like, cool. Well, you know, OG and Associates just deposited $100 million, so we've got the cash. We're moving the deck chairs around. It's the same deal. As that flow dries up, like you said, it caused an issue.
We just talked about
and they went. Go ahead, Joe.
We just talked about three different ways where rising interest rates caused this to happen, right?
Well, exacerbated this.
Exacerbated happening. This.
Didn't cause it. No. From
yeah, maybe not the root cause, but right. a big contributor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is also true when we talk about like interest rates. This is also why for the better part of, I mean, Bill Gross said that he happened to get super lucky. Bill Gross is the fund manager at PIMCO, right? One of the top fixed income fund managers of all time. And if you ask him what made him so successful, he would say declining interest rates. Like interest rate, he started in the 80s and literally timing. As interest rates continued to go down his whole career, he was like, this couldn't be better, you know?
Thanks, mom and dad, for birthing me when you did.
Yes, exactly. And so the way fixed income works, bonds versus interest rates, is you got to think about them like a teeter totter. And you know, I guess, do they still have teeter totters? Is that a thing?
Is it?
You know,
does anybody use
them? They're virtual.
Anymore?
They're on phones now.
A virtual teeter totter.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I just texted you. I'm on the teet part of the totter. So are you going to, you know, but you try to
played that out.
Okay. Sorry. Anyways, it's Saturday. What do you want, dude? Anyways, so teeter totters and interest rates, fixed income. So when bond prices are lower, when interest rates, so what's happened over the last 40 years, interest rates have gone down, right? Continually gone down. So bond prices have gone up. And just as recently as a year and a half ago, interest rates were as low as they've ever been. So when companies are trying to find safe, air quotes, or investors are trying to find safe, air quotes, places to invest their money, they look at those CD rates. Think a year ago, 3-month CDs, year-long CDs, 3-year CDs paying 0.71. And so what do? They say, well, I'm going to buy a 30-year bond. Well, the problem is that the multiplier effect of duration, so how long that bond is versus the interest rate change that happens is an X. So it's like, if I have a 30-year bond or a 20-year bond and interest rates rise, 1%, it's 1 times 20. So I get a 20% decline in my price.
I think there's even another way to think about that, OG. Just if I'm holding on to a bond that's paying 3 and new bonds come out paying 4, nobody wants my bond. So what do I have to do to get money? I gotta sell it at a discount so that it's competitive so that anybody's gonna buy it. I think that's an easy way to think about it.
I like that explanation.
Except that, well done, Joe. Except that if if time were okay, if you had unlimited time, all bond prices go back to the price that they were when they were issued, right? The problem is that when you need to redeem that bond, Doug's shaking his head like, no.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm agreeing and I'm marrying that thought up with what Joe just said, because they can't wait for that 30 years. They got to sell now problem. To fund.
So
to
I've
fund
got this 10 year bond. I've got this 30 year bond and it's like, oh crap, the money dried up, which is what you're talking about. Yeah. And now, so I got to go sell something at a discount.
At a discount.
And now people go, hey, I just heard that SVB is selling bonds at a discount. Maybe we should, you know, now just.
And then you got that great scene from It's a Wonderful Life.
Well, yeah, let's go to the next domino. So Silicon Valley Bank sees the writing on the wall. They realize that we've got these long-term positions and now interest rates rising very quickly. We're going to have to change gears. So they put out the call for new investors. And when they put out the call for new investors, big venture capitalists begin to, and advisors in Silicon Valley begin to think maybe there's something bad going on here, and they begin advising their clients, their startup clients, their incubator clients. I think you really got to watch out and you may want to start pulling your money. And we're off and running then, OG, I think, on a old fashioned hootenanny. We are just over a 2 day period, taking money out quick from this bank, which is trying to do the right thing, by the way. They're trying to reverse course.
And man, a lot of those executives from those companies were really stuck, because as I understand it, the covenants of their corporate debt said, you've got to also have all of your personal funds here as well. So their mortgages, their wealth management, all of that stuff was also there. And if they tried to pull all of that money out, they'd be breaking the covenants of their corporate debt. And so now they're really in trouble. So they're like caught between a rock and a hard place. And if they don't to save their personal stuff, then, and they can't fund payroll, now all of a sudden they've pierced the corporate veil. And all of the liability protections they get as being an officer of the company, if they can't make payroll, and now they're personally liable. So they are really in bad spaces.
Flows back to them. OG's check bounces and he doesn't just sue the company
again.
he doesn't just sue the company
because you just know not to try to deposit them.
Yeah.
Because he gets a Stacky Benjamin's check. He just frames it. He's like, yeah,
my friends call me Cash.
But he doesn't just sue the company. Now the directors, the CEO, they are personally liable. Now, people are thinking, well, wait a minute, there's FDIC insurance. FDIC insurance covers $250,000, which, OG, is a lot of money for you and me to have in a bank account. I don't think we tell many people to keep $250,000 in a bank account down at Silicon Valley. But if you're a corporate client, if it's a company, that's $250,000 is not a ton of money for a company with 200 employees. And also, to Doug's point, when these companies sign up to get money, to get loans, to get cash from Silicon Valley, they also have to have their personal mortgage there. They have to have their personal assets there. And now I've got my own stuff. I've got my company stuff, and the covenants of how I work, to Doug's point earlier, are all tied in. I got to make a choice. I either got to break the contract that I'm in to save my company, or I got to hope like hell the company can reverse course. That's tough.
So what do you do with that? You know, like I can't imagine having to make that decision over the last couple of days as an executive at any of these companies. I've also heard of people who are like third party related, right? Like, hey, we're good, but we run our payroll through.
Yeah.
And we had just deposited our payroll at such and such a company, and now they're frozen. And so it's like, it's all these secondary and tertiary effects.
I got an email today from Gusto, and some of our affiliate programs run through Gusto. Sure. And Gusto wrote and said, hey, just to let everybody know, because we have 50 million emails, we are not affiliated with Silicon Valley Bank. Your payroll system through Gusto is going to be just fine. It's going to be okay.
But I bet they're also sweating bullets at Gusto. Sorry, Doug. Sure. Going like, oh crap, how are we not the next one, perhaps?
Well, first of all, I would make sure you don't have an acronym for your name that has an S and a B in it. Anyway, I think the ripple effects here, there's certainly going to be ripple effects from a tech supply chain standpoint and in that tech industry internally. And some of it'll leak out. I'm sure it's going to make the news and it'll be kind of hyperbolic. It's going to get a lot of people to worry. But my question for you guys and on behalf of our listeners is, do you think the average, I'm not going to say average Joe, I can't give you that. The average Mike should worry about this. The average Mike and Mary, should they be seriously concerned that this is going to impact Bank of America and Citibank and whoever their local banks might be?
Maybe it'll take down Wells Fargo.
If we're lucky. My understanding is that
Wells Fargo.
Yeah. But that Silicon Valley Bank was built their entire business model around the tech industry. 99% of all the business they did, their investments and their customers were all in the tech industry. And with the tech industry having a major correction over the last year, it is going to impact them more than another bank that is far more diversified in its client base and its investments. Does that ring true to you guys?
So the interesting thing is that apparently some of the executives, or at least one of the executives at this bank, was an executive at Lehman Brothers.
We've got that.
Not that we couldn't have seen that writing on the wall. I'm just kidding. Obviously they tried to do their best, but
sure. We've got that via Reuters, by the way, and Fox Business. Got that from
obviously, you know, people aren't trying to like muck stuff up. I'm just kind of making fun of it.
He left Lehman a year before the collapse.
Yeah.
And if you remember also moved very fast.
So Doug's question on this was like, does the average person have to think about this? I do think that you have to recognize that, a bank failure is very, very unlikely. It happens. In fact, the last 5 or 6 years, if we look at the number of bank failures, it's been really, really, really low compared to historical averages. Usually 100 banks a year fail. And when we think of that, we go, a failure? Like, how does a bank fail? Well, it's just, you know, the FDIC, like we talked about at the beginning, the Federal Deposit Insurance Company Corporation shows up and says, hey, we've got to take this over. You guys haven't done a good job. We're gonna make everybody whole.
And they find somebody to buy it, right? They find another bank.
Yeah, merge or do whatever they're going to do. So
they have already. OG, just to clarify that point, FDIC's already set up another corporation. They've already moved the assets over there. They're going to begin selling the assets for anybody with under $250,000 of assets. The amount that was protected by FDIC on Monday, according to every outlet we've seen, you're going to be able to get your money out. Over $250,000, you get what they're calling an advanced dividend, which means that you get in line, you're going to be able to get some money, but it's based on them selling off the assets of Silicon Valley Bank, and it'll depend on what they get. So you'll get maybe some.
They're just going to be standing there and they're all birds next to their Tesla plaids waiting in line
maybe
for their
not the day, Doug. Maybe not the day.
Not today, bro. Oh, so if you're somebody that has a decent amount of cash, FDIC insurance covers you for $250K. That's per account ownership. So you think about the three of us that are here. We could each have an account at the same bank. We could all have joint accounts with each other at the same bank and all be covered for each one of those accounts. But as soon as we double dip ownership, OG's got an account, then OG has a separate account that has 250 in each. Only one of those is covered. OG has an account of 250. OG and Doug have an account for 250. Both of those are covered for 250. So ownership really matters. If you're going to have extra cash, you have to just be aware of this. It's exceedingly rare. You say, well, my money's at JP Morgan. It's at Chase. It's at Bank of America. If you have 260,000, are you likely to be made whole? Yeah, probably. I would say, yeah, probably. But why bother with the gamble? You know, like if you're going to have 300,000 or 400,000 in a bank account, why not make sure that you have it titled correctly? You know, why not just spread it out? Go to a different bank. And I can already see from a sales standpoint how this works. You know, so let's say that you're one of those people, right? You've got 500,000, you got a banking relationship, you've got a banker, and you go, I'm pretty nervous about this. So I'm going to go take, you know, I'm going to take some of my money and diversify. I'm going to go take to a different bank. Your banker goes, no, we're never going to go bankrupt. Why would we're JP Morgan? We would never go, you know, I'm guessing that's the same thing that happened at this bank. I'm sure someone eventually at some point in time was like, well, what happens if I got all this venture capital money that I just raised for $100 million? Like, how do I know it's going to be here tomorrow? Oh, we're a huge bank. We've got $40 billion in assets. We're never going to go bankrupt. Like, oh, okay. You know, so.
And in this case, by the way, they did not go bankrupt. They were taken over by FDIC.
Well, because they were on the way to going bankrupt. Because
they were on the way.
Yeah. And there's a whole difference. You know, I think it's also important to recognize the difference between like the assets of the investor, i.e. the shareholder, right? The people who own the company versus the assets of the depositor. You know, there's two different things there. And banks obviously use the asset of the depositor for investment, long-term investments. But like we talked about at the beginning, if all of a sudden those dominoes start to fall and people start showing up going, I'll take my $42 billion, you know, which is the article that I read that said on Friday, people showed up trying to withdraw $42 billion. They go, yeah, we don't have it. I'll take Hundies. I'll take Benji's.
That's a lot of Patagonia backpacks.
I'll wait. That's Patagonia would be more of Wall Street, wouldn't you say? Isn't that a Wall Street, bro? Patagonia
vest? Yeah, the vest. Yeah, the finance vest. Yeah, maybe.
Too soon.
I think on my end, there's a couple different things here. Number one is if you're in the tech industry, I think I am worried. I think we're not going to know the ripple effects right away. We're definitely going to see some layoffs on Monday. I think we're all waiting to see exactly.
Also, the market's going to suck on Monday.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But with the market, you and I can easily say, don't do anything, right?
Yeah.
That's going to be, except buy. If you happen to, we don't like timing the market, but if you happen to have money that for some reason was just sitting there. That probably is going to be an opportunity, but if you're in the tech sector, I think I watch Monday and Tuesday to see where the layoffs happen. And I see what companies that are affiliated with me really have stuff going on. We've said, no matter what industry you work on, you should always be working on your resume. Anyway, you should be working on your network, keep your LinkedIn profile, like always be building that. Is probably some people are going to get that reminder in tech. If you're outside tech, I kind of agree with what I read earlier today in the LA Times, which was, this is tech's problem, not yours. Talking to most other Americans, OG, which is JP Morgan, we're not going to see anything change there. And if you're just the average person with a bank account, I don't think there's going to be a widespread collapse of banking. There could be widespread panic. We could see people go to their bank because nobody understands how any of this stuff works.
Yeah.
Maybe, but I don't know. But I think one more last thing, OG, before you go, there's also a case study here, which is the number of outlets that talked about all your eggs in one basket. And how many times over the last 12 years have we said that? You really, no matter how great it seems, how cool the bet is, how can't lose it seems to be, when you put everything into one place, like Silicon Valley Bank was Tech's bank, we see what happens.
Yeah. And I kind of want to address that a little bit around investing, because sometimes people will say, well, doesn't that mean then that I should have a Fidelity account and a Vanguard account? And I would say the answer is no, these are completely different things. You don't need to have both, because your ownership of your ETF or the ownership of your, you know, the stocks that you own, convey the ownership rights to you regardless of where those are recorded on, you know, on a computer file, whether it's at Schwab or Fidelity or Vanguard or wherever, right? Where diversification of companies matter is kind of what we're talking about here, where you run up against a very firm limit. I mean, the FDIC says we'll insure you for $250K per account ownership per bank, you know, and And we just kind of take that at face value and go, okay, that's fine. You know, that's cool. Well, so if it's at 500, so who cares? They'll be fine. Well, no, there's a rule about that. You know, that doesn't apply necessarily to your Fidelity account. I wouldn't be racing out and going, well, I need to open a Vanguard one because I only do business at Fidelity right now. Two different things.
I think the big lesson for everyone here is obviously there's going to be a lot of stuff that's going to happen in the next few days. I think, OG, it's a mistake unless you're in the tech sector and to be glued to CNBC, Fox Business, the Wall Street Journal 24/7 the next few days. I think that's a huge mistake unless it's going
to. I recommend everybody meets me in Beaver Creek to go skiing.
Just take your brain.
That's
right
one of
off
the most
it.
OG statements ever.
Take your brain completely off of this. If you have
short-term fluctuations, you know, all that sort of stuff, it is what it is, right? Guess what? If you're trying to trade your stock on Monday morning because you're worried about the market going down, there are 10 bajillion shares already traded before you even woke up. Like you're not going to get the good price. You know, just it is what it is, you know, at this point for those things. If you're bold and you feel like doing a little buy-in, you know, probably some opportunity there.
And let's be clear, we are not calling our shot saying that things are going to be phenomenal Monday and on Wednesday, you're independently wealthy off a $100 bet, right?
That'd be sweet.
We're not calling that things can't go worse or that there
but
won't
it might
be,
happen.
Or that there won't be a widespread panic. I mean, you don't know what comes next. This is news. We're sitting here today on a Saturday night because news happens and there's going to be more news on Monday. Definitely. There's going to be more news on Tuesday.
Yeah.
But I think that if you've got less than $250,000 in a bank account, FDIC takes care of you. They're taking care of it here. Keep your long-term plan.
Yeah. If your plan hasn't changed, your portfolio shouldn't change. Full stop.
Well, we thought about doing this, guys, for Monday, but man, do we have a good show on Monday. And we actually didn't want to change any of the stuff we were going to talk about then. So join us again Monday. Thanks for hanging out. Doug, OG, thanks for coming in for overtime. You guys will all get triple
time and
pay.
A half, baby.
Triple
time
pay.
And a half.
We're going triple pay.
Triple.
This one.
Woo.
Absolutely. Yes.
Don't write checks your ass man. Can't cash. See how.
All right, that's it. We'll see you next time. Doug, I think you've got some quick credits for us.
Thanks for listening and sharing this special episode of the Stacking Benjamin Show. Join us Monday for our regularly scheduled show where we're comparing the best tax software on the market.
Well, I hope you got a lot out of today's episode. But one thing that we talked about a little bit today, but we talk about a lot, is you got to have good partners on your team, stackers. And you know what? Navy Federal Credit Union could be that partner because becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union could help you earn more and save more. And aren't those two of the big tenets, right? Have a debt strategy, earn more, save more. Their certificate options could earn you more than standard savings accounts with competitive rates. Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal does. For example, you can start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit, add money at any time, and watch your savings grow. I think that's the coolest certificate. Thanks to flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal savings options for all kinds of goals, short or long term. Considering a big home improvement project? Maybe you want to consolidate debt. Well, as you're putting your plan together, you want to also have a debt strategy, right? And you could borrow up to 100% of your home's equity with a fixed rate home equity loan with zero closing cost, or easily borrow as you go with a home equity line of credit. Don't get in over your head with debt. Make sure you have a great strategy, and then take out debt as you need it. And Navy Federal's options certainly give you the flexibility to help you make life's big expenses seem more manageable. To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, equal housing lender, membership required, terms and conditions apply, loan subject to approval.